So we'd like to try something different right now, something new.
Thank you.
Hot seat with our TMX trading executives. And we have Kevin Cowan, president, TMX Equities Markets, Deanna Durjevic, senior vice president, and Kevin Sampson, vice president. So we'll be looking to the crowd for some questions. This is your chance. Direct them over and let the questions begin.
No. Nothing controversial today.
I can start if you want. We talk to a lot of clients, and generally we get a lot of questions that are pointed at us, and some that I've posed to you guys before, and I guess it's a little bit topical now. What do you see us doing with our markets with the OPR ruling coming in? Do you think it's good for our markets? Do you guys see it as a net benefit, and why?
I'll start off maybe with that. Good question. I mean, it's interesting. I was up here this morning, obviously, with the panel and getting a lot of the views of those sitting in the chairs, and I guess that question kind of turns the table a little bit on us. I think we'd echo some of the comments that were provided in the earlier panels in that, first, I think we do commend the regulators for taking such a thoughtful and broad and holistic kind of approach in looking at OPR and the various issues that were outlined in that proposal. We certainly are a supporter of having these kind of debates around market structure and some of these policy proposals out in the public domain, and to get all viewpoints and consider them in that policy development process. Certainly the aspect specifically around the threshold for protected status. That's certainly something that we've been on record for quite some time. I think going as far back to some comment letters the Toronto Stock Exchange submitted back in 2001, when the ATS rules were first introduced. So I think generally, we are supportive of that threshold. Some of the other aspects with respect to the fee cap, and namely the prohibition on paying rebates. Certainly this is a pretty new proposal, and we certainly haven't had time to fully digest and consider that internally. But we're going to give a lot of thought to that. And I again echo some of the comments made earlier that one of our primary concerns is about the liquidity impact to the Canadian markets, and certainly vis-a-vis the U.S. and our competitive position against the U.S. We certainly would hope that a pilot, if it proceeds, will definitely focus on that aspect and studying what the impact is to the stocks under the pilot with respect to liquidity, dealer costs, and looking at that in the context of the U.S. That is definitely going to be something that we're highly focused on, and to be frank, something that's always kind of made us pause with respect to considering any independent fee changes on our own with respect to, do we modify, do we make any specific changes to our existing rates outside of the rule set? The first and foremost consideration has been, what does that do to liquidity provision in the Canadian market? Does that disincent some of that liquidity provision that others are benefiting from? Those would be my comments.
Yeah, maybe I just add, I'll try not to repeat what Kevin said and maybe just add some perspective, but I also want to add my compliments to the regulators. I think they've drafted an excellent document. I read it at a time where you might otherwise fall asleep, and I actually didn't. It's a very comprehensive and well thought out document. The one thing I'd say we all need to keep in mind is if you read the document, and it refers right back to the history from 2001, much of the document really is premised on the idea that the regime put in place in 2001 had some unintended consequences. And I think it's just because it is complicated and there's a lot of interacting issues, it's so critical that we all engage in this, that we all carefully examine this and do our best to avoid unintended consequences going further. And if there's one thing I can offer in that regard, and we've heard some of that referred to at various times today, The U.S. threat is large, and it's growing. And if we don't handle this properly, we could have an unintended consequence, I think, that none of us want, which is providing for more flow going south of the border, whether that's because we've taken away some of the tools that we need to be competitive, whether that's certain pricing models, for example, or otherwise. So I think we just need to be careful.
Excellent. Great answer. I have to say that, though.
You have to say that.
Anyone else? Doug? Right behind you.
Okay, Ungad's not up there, but he can feel free to join in on this. I'll throw this, Kevin Callan, to you. We can talk all we want about the threat of the U.S. We can talk about dark pools. We can talk about HFT. But the biggest issue for the TSX is always, like any exchange, stocking the shelves. You've got some headwinds, whether it's crowdfunding, it's private equity, it's indices redomiciling stocks outside of Canada because their activities happen outside of Canada. It's other markets like Santiago in joint venture or by themselves creating venture exchanges. With all those headwinds in your face, how does the TSX continue to stock the shelves in a way that we can continue to hit above our weight as a market?
And Doug, when you talk about stocking the shelves in particular, talking about just the inventory in the book,
listed,
the orders
yeah.
in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think what I would do, Doug, is I would take most of those things that you just referred to, and I'm actually going to turn them around and say they're tailwinds. And then I'll come back to the headwind, which I do think is kind of the core issue of maybe what I was trying to get at a moment ago. I think TMX Group, and if you look at the various operations that we have with the TSX Venture Exchange, the Toronto Stock Exchange, Shorcan Brokers, are as well suited or better suited than anybody to be at the vanguard of what's going to happen in private markets. I don't think any of us know for sure where private markets is going to go. There's certainly been an uptick in exempt market activity. And I think that there's a lot of pressures causing that. I think one of the most interesting things is really just the intersection of social media, for example, and corporate finance, which we're seeing at the grassroots level with crowdfunding, but I think will grow in other ways. But I think we are very uniquely positioned to contribute to to that landscape in a way that actually complements our public markets. When I think about the exempt market, I really think about two buckets for that. The first is those early stage startups that may not be ready for public markets, and therefore we can provide them an alternative facility, but really as an extension of the expertise that we have with, again, what is many others would argue is the world's most successful two-tier exchange. And then the second bucket would be those companies that maybe, a private energy company from Alberta that for a variety of reasons doesn't want to go public. I think through our model, we can accommodate that as well. Going around the world, and you mentioned Santiago, I think we're uniquely positioned, and even right now, we're in the beneficial seat of having people calling us to tap into the expertise that we, and again here, I really want to use the royal we. This is the entire Canadian marketplace that does contribute to what we do so well with public equities, particularly small and medium enterprise. I think we can export that expertise internationally. So I hear you. There will be more competition, but I think we're uniquely situated to turn it into tailwinds. And maybe what you mentioned first, I would relate it back to what I said. I do have concerns that we make sure that with the regulatory landscape going forward and market structure, OPR, rebate pilots, et cetera, that we make sure we do continue to have the tools available so that we can competitively stock our shelves, as you put it, as we do compete for order flow north and south with the United States and compete for capital from other jurisdictions. So that's the one that I think we have to be most careful about.
Thanks, Doug. Please.
Hi, my question is regarding the market data fee on that is charged by the TMX Group. So if I plug in and the ITG team and Doug Clark and the excellent market structures team that they have there, and I'm quoting from this open letter that you wrote to OSC from Feb 8, 2013. So the Canadian full depth of book data costs in excess of 48% more than the US data, even before one normalizes for the volume and value traded in each market. And I quote again from the same text, ASX, that's the Australian Stock Exchange, which is a good comparable for the Toronto market, for the Canadian markets, in terms of the participant population, the GDP, sector weightings, aggregate number of listings, and aggregate market cap. So now I again quote from the letter. The ASX charges a rate that is roughly 1/4 of the TMX for the top of the book and 1/9 of the TMX for the full depth of book information. Can you please explain these discrepancies in the charges?
I can maybe take that. That's probably a question better suited to our DataLinks colleagues, but the question of the value of market data has been out there for a long time, and there's many different ways to look at that value and compare it. And you will see different charts that compare Canada to different jurisdictions, both on level one and level two, and there's different ways to come up with outcomes. I think a couple of years ago there was an industry exercise to question the fees, and TSX had a long discussion with the regulators trying to justify the levels of fees. But things change, and then we have changes in the market, and we have a very big market south of the border, and we also compete on the international level. You mentioned Australia as well. And there may be different formulas that apply that would better serve our market. And I assume you've seen, but last week, the regulators are also coming up with a proposal where we will continue to annually review the fees for every single market based on its contribution to pre- and post-trade transparency. So I think we will now have finally an open discussion of what would work for Canada best. We will certainly give that a lot of thought and provide comments on behalf of TSX, and we expect all of you to submit your thoughts. And so hopefully at the end of that process, we will have a method that we all believe in and we think is the fair for the market that allows us to compare all of these different marketplaces, just TSX, to the world and provide the right value. But it's a tough one. This question has been raised in many jurisdictions many times over, and there's different ways of looking at that. But we're finally getting to that question, and we'll be able to deal with it with the latest proposal from the CSA.
If I could just add one thing, exactly a year ago in May, I was sitting in a room just like this in Australia, where somebody, an Australian listed company, got up and asked me, why are your listing fees so much lower than the Australian Stock Exchange? So it was nice to be on the other side of that.
Excellent. Any more questions? Craig?
So this is a question for either one of the Kevins, I think. Can you talk about the public relations experience of the TMX, given the book release in the States? I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say the name of the book, but I'll just call it the book. Who's calling? What are they asking about? And how you're responding to their inquiries?
Well, I'd love to take that because, sure. And Kev, please feel free to jump in and offer some additional comment. But I guess I'd say it's been a very, very exciting and colorful time. I know probably just about everybody in the room watched the debate on 60 Minutes. So that was interesting. Coincidentally, I was in New York on Wednesday of that week, and I did meet with the people from IEX, so I got a chance to sort of see firsthand their perspective on all of this. And I guess I have a lot of impressions from all of this over the last you know, 6 weeks or so. First and foremost, my biggest concern is that there's this proliferation of a headline because of the book that markets are rigged or unfair. And the panel this morning commented on that, so I don't want to repeat too much of what they said. But the Canadian markets in particular are not only unequivocally not rigged, but certainly in my view, are among the fairest in the world. And it was interesting being in New York and hearing many people that I was speaking with in the aftermath of the book's release, which I guess had just been on that Monday, saying the same thing. So I do think we have among the fairest markets. And I also, the other thing I worry about is the book has now, you know, gone from, you know, sort of a community like this that is constantly engaging in this debate and has a certain level of information available to it into the retail community. And of course, the danger is that the retail community sees the headlines, and I that does worry me that there could be an undermining of investor confidence because, in my view is a misinterpretation of the book, or very good storytelling. Kev referred to earlier whether it should be in the fiction or the fact section, and I don't want to cast too much judgment that way, but that is a concern to me. But the most important thing I'd say is what I've really enjoyed over the last 6 weeks is the level of dialogue and the level of debate and the intellectual discourse on this topic, I think, is the highest quality of any period we've seen in the last 5 years. And I think it's because the book, if it has done nothing else, has crystallized an informed debate. So among communities like this, I mean, every day there's things in the news from very reputable commentators on all sides of the debate who are debating these issues, and I think that level of intellectual discourse has been great, and I think a lot of people are starting to say, we can't approach this and say, all HFT is bad or all HFT is good. There's all different sorts of behaviors. We're going to get into that a little bit later today. And we have to be more careful and more circumspect about how we, you know, how big the brush is that we use to paint this. So by and large, I think it's, in a kind of weird way, been good for healthy debate.
And maybe just to add to that, it's definitely, obviously, a very polarizing kind of book, right? And there's a lot of people that have a variety of different views and on that. And again, just to kind of reiterate what Kevin said, I think it's great that, you know, people are looking to try to find the facts, right? Try to get through all the information that's provided in that book and try to relate that to how they do business and how they interact with the market. And it's interesting when you talk to different people that they interpret the book differently and they interpret what it means and what the focus is. We've heard a lot of people that read the book and say it's not so much about HFT, but about off-exchange trading, for example, and look at it through that kind of lens, which you can kind of see even some of the debate that's going on in the U.S. that's kind of shifting in that direction from not necessarily a pure HFT debate, but around things like we talked about this morning, order handling practices, what kind of transparency is there, and how an order is interacting with the market and the different counterparties that are privy to that order and executing against that order. And it was also very interesting to hear just Mary Jo White, the chairperson of the SEC, that came out after the book was released, and clearly said, you know, there's nothing new here, right? Like we've seen all this, we understand all this, we know about this. We've known it for quite a while, and we've been examining it, and we've been taking very prudent and responsible measures in examining the market structure and some of the items that were there. So as far as, you know, from the experts, as far as, in market structure to some degree, and looking at the SEC, there's nothing really new there. And I think, you know, people are starting to understand that.
I can't resist one more observation, and I'll stop after this one. But one thing I did find extremely interesting also is about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way through the book, there's talk about the U.S. fragmented dark pool system. And I think that's fascinating because that's where we have probably the biggest single difference between Canada and the United States in terms of how the dark pools operate, particularly with the lack of the fair access rule like we have here in Canada, a lot of broker-owned internalization pools. And if you look at what's coming out of New York Attorney General Schneiderman and what the FBI are doing, I think there's going to be a really interesting intersection between, you know, as they start turning over stones and as you think about what's described in the book in terms of that dark pool fragmentation and the way those dark pools operate, there may be something interesting there that comes out of this.
All right, I'll take another stab at it. I'm going to pick on Deanna this time. What worries you? What keeps you up at night? And I'm going to hope it's not your business development team, but happy to hear what you're thinking.
You worry me at day. You think you worry me at night.
You only keep us up at night when you're calling from a different time zone, Jeff.
Yeah. I think we touched on a large number of issues today, maybe to single out a few. I mean, despite the panel this morning that talked about the so-called U.S. threat, maybe came out a little bit mild. I still think that that's a significant issue for our market, and you can look at it in different ways. So as long as we have an economic pressure and difference between the conditions that are available in north of the border versus what's available south of the border, and whether that's driven by regulatory differences or other issues, doesn't really matter, that tension is not good. And to the extent that we have regulation that's stopping the flow, that's not the best outcome, and we need to look for ways to recreate some of those economics here within the existing regulatory framework. And that's not easy, but we've heard this cry many times that, you know, I don't need to repeat all that, but some of the execution options you can get in the States, from guaranteed fills to price improvement to payment for flow or monetizing the flow, are real. Our market is fair and better in so many other ways, but that tension remains. And I think that will, commercial pressures are like water, they will find their way. And we just can't be sitting back and waiting for that to happen. So I still maintain that we need to keep looking at that. We certainly do. We'll continue to work with all of you and the regulators as well to see what are some of the options that we can pursue there. Another issue that also worries me is the ability for the venture community to keep up with the changes in the electronification. And we talked many times today how venture is an important part of the Canadian fabric and how it actually is a unique public system for venture capital raising, and it does feed into the senior market and makes the markets healthier. But that is a very different market than the senior market and is very high touch. So the high electronification of markets today doesn't work well really with that system. So we're very carefully looking at that and making sure that that remains and that we have that we do anything that can be done to allow that market to adapt to the new times. So that's also very important. And I think the third one, which again everyone mentioned today, is the general level of complexity and pace of change is a big worry. And that's kind of a double sword for us, because every time we see a problem, we would like to respond with a solution. Every time we respond with a solution, that's more work for the community, more things to understand, more things to adapt. And so the cycle is very, very fast. Our experience normally is when we launch a system, it takes anywhere between 9 and 18 months for it to really sink in into the market. So even though people appear connected, by the time they really start using a new feature, it takes time. And if you just look at the regulatory changes and the new markets coming and going, 18 months is a very long period of time. So our cycles are a little bit out of tune, and it is a lot of work and a lot of cost for the community to adapt. The outcome of that is, someone mentioned it earlier, you may get different, bigger polarization between smaller and bigger players, and that's not good for the market either. So these are all larger level questions, and as we do things on TMX, we kind of try and have these in mind and then make sure they're all addressed.
It's almost impossible to overestimate the challenge of the second one in particular around the independent broker. In Canada, we have a fabulous set of banks that do a great job doing a great job for the larger cap companies. And there are some instances, certainly, where the banks, come down the maturity curve and are financing earlier stage companies in the public markets. And we love that when that happens. But our real competitive advantage as Canadians, all of us together, has been the two-tier exchange system that allows us to produce those 700 graduates that I referred to this morning, moving from venture up to Toronto and populating, for example, the TSX Composite Index. And the independent broker has been such an important and critical part of that ecosystem. So I think particularly as we're going through tougher times here, it is very important that we look for ways to help that community.
Very good. Any questions from the audience? Thank you.
Hi. Earlier on the panel that Deanna moderated, there was a suggestion regarding a way to bring more flow from south of the border back to Canada, and that was in particular, I think, to make an exemption to OPR for blocks and for TSX to develop some type of, quote-unquote, big boy or big girl market. Would love to hear the collective thoughts of the three of you on that idea.
Sure, I can take that one. I think a problem that we have been trying to solve since I've been in this industry, and we will keep trying to solve it. Block liquidity obviously has its own needs and economics, and we don't need to talk about that. And OPR is one of the limitations. But Canada has a unique challenge in size and the liquidity that it has. And to facilitate blocks through organized market, you need a lot of liquidity. And Thomas mentioned it earlier, but I think we've had probably 5, 6, 7 attempts of having a really liquid block trading facility in Canada, and it only had limited success. We have a couple of pools operating today to try to do that. And I'm not sure the OPR is a big issue. If I remember well, Blockbook actually had an exemption from OPR and still wasn't enough. So just one of the factors in making such a pool successful. So we continue to look at that for sure. The current way of the works is the buy side is really relying more and more on algos and trying to have that flow executed in the lit markets, both north and south of the border. But we do continue to look at that option, and if a new idea comes along, we'll definitely pursue that.
All right. Well, I'll ask another question, if no one else has anything for us. We've talked a lot about problems and issues today. I'd like to ask Kevin, what excites you? What are you excited about in the projects and what you're seeing in the market?
I think it is a time of tremendous change. So it is always important to be obviously forward-looking, not just backward-looking or dealing with the current circumstances. I think we saw in the last several years this incredible run-up where Canada became much more of a player on the world stage, and we saw lots of people, particularly through the commodity boom, come and trade Canada, come and finance in Canada, et cetera. We're now in a different part of the cycle, as we saw from Avery Shenfield this morning, and things are a little bit more challenging. But one of the things that continues to excite me the most long-term is the ability to take the competitive advantages that we have onto a broader stage. We are doing that now. We certainly, all of our businesses have very active international business development programs with very extensive international customers that are coming and making use of those services. I think the challenge for us is to continue to not only bring those customers to Canada, but increasingly look for ways to service those customers beyond our own border. So that's certainly one of the things that continues to excite me the most.
Excellent. So I think we have time for one last question, if anyone has one from the audience. This is your chance. All right. Well, that's it.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks very
wrap
much.
It up.
Thank
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Very insightful.